Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. It's a prairie edition of Garden Talk today, and Neil DeBole is back with us. He's president of Prairie Nursery, recognized internationally as an expert in native plant community ecology. So we'll talk with him about adding prairie grasses to your native garden, what plants attract butterflies, and of course, we'll take your questions as well. Jill Nadeau, who has a prairie right in her backyard, she put one in, I think, last summer, wasn't it, Jill?
Sure, Larry, right in my backyard.
I know you had some people over looking at that at your backyard, so she's into this, and she's also into our winter member drive. Your support is the foundation of funding for WPR programs. In fact, it's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great discussions. And so Jill and I are here to encourage you to make your gift in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And last hour, we heard from 22 donors. Thank you all so very much. This goal, this hour, is 35 gifts. So these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on.
So let's meet this goal. It happens one gift at a time, and let's start with yours at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, you enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial-free. Now, that means that we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, and business sponsors are important, and there's another source that's very important, too.
That's exactly right. The largest piece of funding for our programs comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things work around here. And when you give, you keep quality, independent talk and information on the air, shows like Garden Talk. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And a big thank you to everyone who's contributed today. WPR is listener supported. That means that your gift keeps Wisconsin Public Radio the strong, reliable station that you depend on. You decide the amount, for example, $10 or $20 a month, and support your listening at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing. You could win a Sonos Move Smart speaker when you make a gift of any amount for the WPR programs you rely on now. Five lucky winners will enjoy hands-free voice command access to music, programs, and podcasts from WPR and more with this portable smart speaker. No contribution is necessary. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Smart Speaker Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support today of WPR keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And whether your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on it.
That's right. And, you know, giving to WPR is probably going to be the easiest thing that you're going to do today. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a few minutes to make your contribution to WPR, and those few minutes fund our daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when 35 more people support WPR programs in the next, 50 minutes or so, we'll meet our goal. So WPR is listener-powered. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll be entered into our exciting drawing. Wow, five lucky people will win a portable smart speaker, the Sonos Move Sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gift, you're automatically entered. If you're not a sustainer, maybe a good time to be signing up right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you are a sustaining member already, making those ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. Maybe today will be the day that you want to increase your support to WPR by $5 or $10 a month, or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Like Mary Ann in Friendship says, thank you for years of great programs, Larry, and here's to many more. And Josh in Beaver Dam says, every day is a world of new information on WPR. So true.
So there you go. Mary Ann, Josh, thank you both very much. And thank you if you've given. If you haven't, do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Neil DeBole is with us today. Neil is president of Prairie Nursery and a consulting ecologist. Always great to have him come by to talk about native plants for pollinators and insects. And certainly if you have a question or a comment or maybe an experience to share, give a call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Neil, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be with you. I would like to make my pledge now. Can you take that for me, please? I've been so busy all week,
man.
I haven't had a chance to call in. It's now's the perfect time.
You're going to have to wait until Jill and I talk again. Then you can quickly phone in. It only takes a couple of minutes.
I know you have.
Well, let's talk about coevolution of plants and animals for just a minute, and how native plants fit into that idea. I think that's a kind of a cool concept to talk about.
It's a hugely important concept, Larry, because the coevolution that has occurred between plants and animals over millions of years is so central to the sustainability of the ecosystems that we all rely on for life, not just the pollinators, but all of us, humans and every other life form on the planet. And you have situations where plants and animals have co-evolved and figured out strategies to avoid being eaten by insects and how insects can overcome the toxins that plants produce in their leaves so that they can't be eaten. And so you have this constant dance between plant life and animal life for survival of all. And so a lot of insects are specialists because they are able to overcome the specific toxins that plants generate and produce in their leaves and stems. And so they can be specialists because it takes a lot of energy to overcome these plant toxins. So most all plants have some sort of chemical warfare that they use against insects, and then the insects have to overcome this by being immune to it. And the classic example, of course, is the milkweed and the ability of monarch caterpillars to eat the very toxic sap and leaves of the milkweed, along with many, many other species. I mean, the ecology of the milkweed plant is amazing. There are books on it, and so people that are interested in this should just Google milkweed ecosystem or something like that. There's books on it. Just absolutely amazing. So this is super important, and this is why native plants are so important. Because when you bring non-native plants into an ecosystem, there's no coevolution that has occurred over thousands or millions of years. And so they become essentially inedible to many insects. And so they provide little or no services, ecological services. And this is the foundation of the whole food chain. And this dance between plants and animals. And there's no better source of information on this than the books by entomologist Douglas Tallamy at the University of Maryland. And he wrote the classic book in 2006, Bringing Nature Home. And I cannot too strongly recommend this book, and I'm sure many of your listeners have read this, but Bringing Nature Home was the scientific proof of the link between native plants and native insects and how important they are. And he compared the number of species or genera that utilize native trees and shrubs, et cetera, for their larval food stage compared to non-native plants, and it's orders of magnitude higher. So Bringing Nature Home, he has another book called Nature's Best Hope, and he has a brand new book called The Nature of Oaks, and oaks support more different larval insects than any other genera. So Douglas Ptolemy, any book he writes is amazing. If you have a chance to see him give a lecture or a Zoom presentation, do not miss it.
Yeah, he does a great, great job. Well, we all want pollinators in our garden, but other insects are important too. Maybe you could talk about some that we want to have.
Sure. Well, you know, everybody loves butterflies. And I will tell you, I've been doing this 40 years. And until fairly recently, if you told people that, gee, we have all these great plants for attracting bees, they didn't like it because they're afraid they'd be stung or their kids would get stung. Well, people have progressed past that. And so now bees are a big part of our gardens. But here's a really important aspect of the insect world that is underappreciated and misunderstood, and that is wasps. And you say, you want me to garden for wasps? Are you crazy? But I think it's very important to make the distinction between predaceous wasps, like yellow jackets and hornets and things like that that do sting people, and parasitic wasps. And frankly, most predaceous wasps will not bother you if you don't bother them. The only exception is the yellow jacket, which will sting you just as soon as look at you. But all the rest of the predaceous wasps are pretty much docile unless you provoke them. But the parasitic wasps are amazing, and there are many more parasitic wasps than predaceous wasps, but we never see them because they're so small. And they parasitize insects and spiders and mites and ticks and just about any type of invertebrate that they can lay eggs on or somehow parasitize, they do it. And as E.L. Wilson, the great entomologist at Harvard, said, the insects, ants, and bees, which are the Hymenoptera, are the little things that keep the world running right because they keep everything under control. They keep all the other bugs under control. So there is a methodology for these wasps to parasitize almost every other invertebrate creature so they don't get out of control. So why is this important to the gardener? Mm-hmm. Because parasitic wasps help control problem insects in your garden. And here's a classic example. I had a customer many years ago who had terrible problems with tomato hornworms in his vegetable garden. He planted 1,000 square feet of one of our prairie mixes that had a plant called Rattlesnake Master, Eryngium yuccifolium. Well, Eryngium yuccifolium is pollinated almost exclusively by wasps and many, many parasitic wasps. And once that plant reached blooming stage, 3 years after he seeded his prairie, his problem with tomato hornworms went away. Because there are parasitic wasps, a parasitic wasp, that attacks tomato hornworm and lays eggs on its larva. And then the eggs hatch and burrow into the larva and eat it from the inside out and kill it.
Oh, man.
It's pretty gruesome, but it's amazingly effective. And so this controlled his tomato hornworm. So he said, my prairie is my insecticide. So you can get rid of your insecticides. Throw away all your insecticides. They're terrible. They kill all the beneficials. So if you have a nice balance of all these different creatures and parasitic wasps, you may not need to use any kind of chemical control. There may be exceptions like the dreaded Colorado potato beetle. I don't know what you do about that, but there's a lot of insects that can be controlled naturally just by planting native prairie plants and attracting wasps.
Neil DeBole, president of Prairie Nursery and a consulting ecologist, our guest today. Oh, I should mention, Jana Rose Schleiss is our on-air producer today. Tyler Ditter is our engineer, and Jill Nadeau is the producer, but she's also a mouthpiece on the show today. She's with us during this winter member drive to talk about your support. It's an essential piece of the funding for all the programs you enjoy on WPR. In fact, listener support, it's the largest source of funding for our shows. And this drive is your time to take some action. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. How are we doing, by the way, Jill?
Well, I was just going to tell you, we've got about 24 people who joined in. They're now members. And so thank you so much. We have 40 minutes or so more. Oh, I'm sorry. I messed up. 11 people, and we need 24. So anyway, yeah, thank goodness it's Friday. So please make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
And how do you do that? Well, you go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We're listeners powered here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. And you know, you may not agree with all the opinions that you hear from callers or newsmakers on WPR programs. And that's, you know, that's actually a good thing. It means that you are hearing multiple points of view, that you're fully engaged in a real discussion.
Means that you're better informed about the issues because you've heard those different perspectives, and you can count on WPR for this kind of experience. We're listener-supported, and your gift right now helps keep that diversity of opinions on the air. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone and for Netflix and a bunch of other different apps. Well, now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services that you rely on.
The difference here is that you decide how much to give, support the programs that are part of your day, become a WPR sustainer maybe. Choose a monthly gift amount that works for you, then set up ongoing installments at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
This member drive, ask for the new WPR water bottle when you give $20 a month or more.
I would definitely take it out hiking. It looks like it would fit in a backpack really well.
I think I would station my WPR water bottle somewhere nearby where I could see it, where it could be inspirational to keep me going through my at-home workout.
That's something I would drink water out of, maybe some tea, juice.
Ask for the new WPR water bottle when you give $20 a month or more. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support, we keep saying it, it's the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this drive is so important. And your gift might be $10 a month, could be $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And Larry, we're still looking for 25 more people to join in. And your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs that you rely on every day.
Thanks. If you've already given, if you haven't, boy, the time is right now. Right now during Garden Talk. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And, you know, after you've given your donation to WPR, you can make your gift go farther by telling your friends and family what you just did.
Oh, they can, can't they?
They can. There's this thing called social media that works really well for that.
Get on the phone, call somebody up. You mention it when you see them. You know, just letting your friends and family know that you support WPR is going to help plant that idea in their mind. So make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and then let your friends know how good it feels when you support the station you enjoy every single day.
That's right, and we've got about 35 minutes left in this hour, and we are looking for 24 more people to join in. Remember, you make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You can support the programs you value and ask for your WPR stainless steel water bottle. You can ask for yours when you give, $20 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, we'll become one right now. It's easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing donations, monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. This will provide reliable support for the programs that you love, like Joanne in Black River Falls, who says, I appreciate WPR's integrity and positive spirit. And Samson in Edgerton says, WPR is radio that we can count on.
Thanks, Joanne and Samson. Your gift is powerful. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Taking a look at native plants for pollinators and other insects with our guest, Neil DeBole, president of Prairie Nursery. Great to have Neil back with us today. And lots of callers online, Neil, so maybe we should take a call or two here. Let's go to Tracy in Mount Horeb. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, and Larry, thanks for taking my call and for your helpful and interesting show.
Thank you.
I have a question. We have some land that just had box elder, honeysuckle, and buckthorn removed. It's probably less than an acre around a creek. And what I'm wondering is, we purchased the land restoration mix to throw in this area, but we're not sure, based on the time of year, should we clean out the debris that's left and put in an annual crop and wait to throw that seed in the fall after we burn it off and prepare the soil? Or should we leave the debris, let it naturally decay, and then throw just the grass now while there's snow on the ground and the forbs in the fall?
Let me ask a few questions, Tracy. When you cut down the box elder and honeysuckle last year, I take it?
They were removed by an excavator just this week. So they pulled them out and they piled them up. So the ground is nicely disturbed, but it has some bigger, like, potholes left over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they dug up all the roots, so there's no roots left to resprout. Is that correct?
Well, you know, they got the root ball.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
root ball. And what we have done in the past is we go back and cut and spot spray anything that starts to pop up. We know we need to maintain that still.
Okay. Normally, the best way to do this is to make sure you've got everything under control before you put down your seed. So what we would normally do in this case is we would spend all of this year, 2021, getting the site ready and then plant it in late summer. Now, this presupposes that you can do this without there being erosion along the stream side. This is a bit of a concern. If there's any slope or any places that would flood, if you have bare soil, then you have all sorts of issues with soil erosion and water quality degradation, et cetera. So staging the process is really important. Do you have information on what the hydrology of this area is? Do you expect flooding, or is it not going to be a problem in this area? Is it hilly? Would you see erosion, or is it pretty stable?
We actually did this on one side of the creek last fall, mm-hmm. and we didn't add anything to it. And we didn't have flooding, but last year wasn't a bad year for it. The creek is small with steep banks.
You're seeding the steep banks?
No, we are seeding the area, the prairie around the creek.
Got it. Okay. And is that fairly level where it won't erode?
It's very level. It is prone to being wet when we have wet seasons. But like last summer, it was not wet at all. We could work in that area very easily.
Okay, so you can work the ground or do whatever you need to do, either by herbiciding it or tilling it or whatever methodology, without running the risk of erosion or runoff. Is that correct?
Yeah, what I'm wondering is, should we go through that whole process where we prepare the soil and then put in an annual crop, and then remove that crop in the fall, and then seed in the fall? Is that what you're recommending?
Not necessarily. It depends on if you have a lot of perennial vegetation in there, either resprouts of the woody plants or weedy grasses like quackgrass or smooth brome grass or even bluegrass or other weeds, you would have to kill those off before you put down your prairie seed, or they will compete heavily with it and cause no end of problems. So the trick to a proper prairie restoration using seed is really careful and thorough site preparation before you put the seed down. So based on the history of this site with the box elders, honeysuckle, et cetera, I'm going to guess there's all sorts of weedy vegetation there that you need to eliminate before you seed, which will require a full growing season typically of either site preparation by soil tillage, repeated herbicide treatments every month or so, just using glyphosate, usually, unless you have a problem weed. Or if it's a small area, you can smother it there. Also, you can, to some degree, get some control with cover crops like buckwheat, which you would seed after the danger of frost has passed, usually in June. Buckwheat is pretty good at smothering out weeds, but it doesn't necessarily kill all the perennial problem weeds. So it's not as effective as regular soil tillage, herbicide treatments, or smothering. But you definitely want to have a plan in place to to remove and eliminate all the existing weeds before you put your seed down. And if you have an erosion-prone site, even though yours is not, you want to plant that seed around no later than September 15th, usually between late August and mid-September, with a cover crop of usually oats. You can plant oats at 100 to 128 pounds per acre, which is about 3 pounds per 1,000 square feet. And you add that to your prairie seed, and the oats will germinate and grow in the fall and hold the soil pretty well over the winter. And it dies off, so it doesn't compete with the prairie the next year. But you do want to get it planted in early September so you get enough growth of those roots to hold your soil over the fall and winter. So site preparation is essential, and then your seeding time is also important. And I think if you follow those procedures, you'll have good results. But you really want to get those weeds under control first.
Oh, there you go, Tracy. Thank you so much for calling. Paul in Richland Center will turn to you. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thank you very much. First of all, I ordered a bunch of prairie plants from Prairie Nursery last year, and I want to compliment you. Plants were absolutely beautiful, and my backyard squirrels and birds loved the packing material that I used as mulch, as I was told to do. But my question is the red milkweed. The red milkweed I purchased was the most prolific. It grew like a weed, which is probably what it is, and to the point where it actually blossomed in the first year, which kind of surprised me. It was attracting butterflies and bees and wasps. There were wasps on my... And then all of a sudden, the end of July, first of August, the leaves started drooping. And I thought, okay, maybe they're just dry, because it got pretty dry around here at that time. So I watered them. That didn't do any good. And I went out one day, and they were covered in little red bugs. So I looked those little red bugs up online and saw that was a very common bug for red milkweed. So my question is, Did they kill those things? And do I, because I got a catalog from you last week, do I need to be ordering more? And if it didn't kill them and they will come back, how do I prevent these little red bugs from coming back again with some kind of an insecticide that's not going to kill, you know, the pollinators that I want on those things? And if you tell me I'm supposed to hand pick those things off, I can assure you I will not do that. There's got to be a better way.
Sure.
So anyway, yeah, I will take my answer off the air.
Well, Paul, right. Question, what was your identification of the bug?
I don't know
if it was oftentimes these little red bugs are mites. I mean, it could have been very small aphids, which are plant-sucking bugs that suck the life out of the plant. That's a very common problem.
That's exactly what they were, because when I looked them up online, they were like some kind of an aphid that sucked the juice and the sap, and that's why they were, you know, basically drying up. That's what I saw online. And I saw pictures of them that looked exactly like what I had.
Yep. Aphids are a very common problem. They love the red milkweed, sometimes known as marsh milkweed or swamp milkweed, and it is a very common problem with them as far as infestations. The typical way to control those is with ladybugs, which are voracious consumers of aphids, so you can actually buy ladybugs. That presupposes that they will stick around and eat your aphids. There's no guarantee of that. The other choice with aphids is you can take, if it's near a hose, you can take a hose and put it on a pretty strong mist and wash the aphids off. But it's a never-ending process. But you can remove a vast majority of them by putting a strong hose mist on them and wash them off. You can also use less toxic insecticides like neem oil or safer soap. You can actually smother them with the neem oil because it covers these spherules which they breathe. And can kill them. So it's not a systemic herbicide. Like, of course, you would completely avoid anything with neonicotinoids or any other systemic herbicides, insecticides. So neem oil is safe for so many other creatures that do not receive it directly on them. So I would go with that and see if that doesn't help you and see if you get better results next year. It probably did not kill your plants. Usually what you see, if they're mid-season or late season, they'll lose their leaves, and then they'll pretty much go dormant for the year. They will typically come back the following year, if they experience this year after year, then it can weaken the plant and eventually kill it.
Yeah. If they come back, you want to be kind of careful then and keep a good watch, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because if they only have a half year of growth, then they're missing out on the remainder of the year to replenish their roots. So you definitely want to get them under control. But I would start with a safer soap and a neem oil and see if those don't work for you. And that should not harm most other insects.
Thank you very much for calling, Paul. Appreciate your call. Neil DeBola, our guest today, he is president of Prairie Nursery. Always fun to have him come by. And always fun to see Jill Nadeau's smiling face. She's come back and she's with us to talk about our member drive. Your support, of course, it's the essential piece of funding for the show, this show, and all the programs you enjoy on public radio. In fact, listener support is still our largest source of funding for our shows. This drive is your time to take some action. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when 21 more people join in the next, 20 minutes or so, we'll meet our goal. Now, these hourly goals are set up to make sure that we have the funding for the programs that you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have many, many master gardeners who listen to the show, and they probably know, maybe you didn't know, that master gardeners can get continuing education credits for listening to Garden Talk. And I think that just goes to show what a valuable resource Garden Talk is to listeners like you. You can enjoy the show every week, whether you're an expert or maybe you're just starting out.
That's right. And we have some of the best gardeners in our state right here to answer your questions, like Neil, for instance. So whether it's, you know, fruit trees, organic gardening, rose bushes, or prairie gardening, like we're talking about today with natives, help Garden Talk grow. I didn't write this. Help Garden Talk grow right now by making your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just think about the amount of money you spend every day on just those day-to-day things. Jill's probably a six-pack or two of beer a day. No, I don't. No, she might be coffee, but you might spend on coffee. You might spend on takeout. It all adds up at the end of the day. It's easy to spend on things that are part of your routine, actually.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I'm afraid that beer and coffee are not part of mine, but Wisconsin Public Radio is, and I'm sure it's part of your routine, too. It's your news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some money on it today. Start with a dollar a day. That's $30 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I prefer more balanced conversation. That's what took me to WPR. When I got there, I found a whole host of programming that interests me. Gardening shows, home improvement shows, humor shows, word language shows, things that just grab my interest and grab my attention. It's not just one thing. We had been giving on an annual basis for years. I didn't want this to be an annual decision, and I think that's where we decided to make the change and become sustaining members. It was a statement of values as much as a statement of financial commitment. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
Bruce, thank you very much. Join Bruce. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support during our winter drive makes all the programs you rely on possible. And your gift, maybe it's $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And if you've already renewed or you make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
And if you haven't given yet, you can join the thousands of other WPR members by donating at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We've got about 20 minutes left to this hour, and we're still looking for 21 more people to join in. Now, you make WPR possible with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll be entered into our exciting drawing today. There are five lucky people will win a portable smart speaker, the Sonos Move. No contribution necessary. See WPR.org/drawing for details. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Sustainers, of course, making the monthly ongoing gifts, you're automatically entered.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up the monthly donations from your bank account or a credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs that you love and get automatically entered in the drawings we have during member drives. Caitlin in Prairie du Sac says, I'm donating in honor of my manager. She's a big WPR listener and always brings us interesting things she's learned. And Mary in Madison says, I'm an essential worker. Thank you so much, Mary, and who really appreciates your programming.
Yeah, thanks to them and thanks to you if you've given already. If you haven't, do it right now in support of Garden Talk and all of our programs at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at native plants for pollinators and insects with our guest, Neil DeBole, president of Prairie Nursery. Always great to have him come by. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Let's take another call. Jim in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Jim, what's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I would simply, well, first of all, I'm a complete novice. I have no idea what I'm doing. But I have a normal city lot, and I'd like to devote parts of it to native plants. Now, I got one area that's heavily shaded, another moderately, and then one that's in the sun. I'd like to do it for two reasons. One, I'd like to do something that supports the birds in the area. And the other is I don't want to mow as much lawn. So,
good ideas.
Yeah, I'm asking for directions, please.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you what. We have, I think, exactly what you need. What you can do is you can install a native garden using transplants in a small area. We were talking earlier about using a seed mix on large areas. But for the average person with a city lot or small suburban property, moderate-sized property, if you want to have a nice prairie garden or woodland garden, you can put in transplants, which gives you faster results than seeds, which usually take 3 to 5 years. The transplants, as another caller said earlier, oftentimes will bloom in the year that they're installed. So you get pretty fast results. And we actually have a pre-designed bird garden that you can order by going to our website, prairienursery.com, or you can call us at 1-800-476-9453. And we'd be more than happy to assist you with that. We have woodland gardens, and we have gardens for all sorts of other applications, for monarch butterflies, for pollinators. And you can go on our website and just look at all the different garden types. And they come in different sizes. Some are for 32 plants, some are for 64, some are for 40. And so you can fit them to your particular area that you want to put in a garden. So it's a quick, easy way to start a garden. You just dig up the lawn. You don't have to use any herbicides or anything. You just get a shovel and dig up all the grasses, any weeds, et cetera. Make sure and remove all the roots, and then you put in your plants. And the best time to do this usually is in the spring, but we can certainly have great results if we do this in late September and early October as well. These are the best times to put in your native plants. Some of the woodland plants actually do better when they are installed in the fall, because a lot of them come up early in spring. And by putting them in the ground in the fall, that allows them to become situated before their early emergence in the spring. So in a situation like yours, I think it would really be a good idea to look at the various gardens available and then pick the one or ones that fit your particular soil conditions, your sun conditions, and then your goals as far as what kind of wildlife that you'd like to attract.
Yeah, and you have that all. And what's your website again, Neil?
It's prairienursery.com. That's P-R-A-I-R-I-E, nursery, N-U-R-S-E-R-Y.com. And there's all sorts of information about plant gardens and individual plants and seed mixes. So there's a ton of information. Also, there's a section called Resources and Guides. And in that section, it tells you all about how to get started for beginners. And it goes into a significant depth as far as how to prepare sites and how to seed prairies and all sorts of information that helps the gardener get started and work there all the way through the process, start to finish.
And I did want to mention that, you know, speaking of information, reminded me that the Garden Expo is this weekend. And so if you are interested in I know, for example, that there are some nice features on prairies. Tim Isay was telling me he's got an hour long or so video that'll be up on the Garden Expo website. We have links to all that at the Larry Mueller Show in our notes section. So if you want to go and learn, get signed up for Garden Expo, you can do that. It's all online this year, and they've got a fascinating program set up. So there you go with that. Let's go to Marie in Dodgeville next. Hi, Marie.
Hi there. I'm glad I can ask some questions. We live on a little under an acre, and I grow a lot of veggies and fruits. And I have, thanks to Prairie Nursery, I have about 1,000 square feet in native to tall, all different heights, mixed height diversity mix, covering our septic drain field. And then I also have a lot of ornamental natives, and I'm trying to put in more every year. So since I grow all these veggies, I have problems with squash vine borer, cucumber beetles, and voles. Are there any special plants that you would recommend to help control these things?
Whoa, that's a little out of my area. The voles are a never-ending issue. They are really a problem in my orchard. They girdled some of my apple trees one winter under deep snow, and that was a disaster. The trees survived, but they were harmed. As far as the cucumber and squash beetles, you know, Larry probably knows more about this than I do. Larry, do you have any suggestions on this?
Boy, those are difficult things. You know, sometimes I'm trying to think of the netting that is used. I'm forgetting the name off the top of my head, but there are some nettings that you can use at the right time of the year. Just place it over. It's inexpensive. And you can place it over the plants and keep the borers from entering. It's a good, you know, sort of a non-chemical way to deal with them. I'll think some more about that, and I'll come up with it'll come to my brain, and I'll have some more information on that as we go along here.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Neil.
I don't know any natural enemies. I'm sure there may be some. It's not a real area of my expertise if there are any natural enemies, much less any plants that would attract those natural enemies that would attack those borers.
Yeah,
that's kind of a tricky one.
Floating row covers. That's what that's the term that was.
Sure, right.
That was I was trying to come up with, and that's something to look into. And it's they're pretty inexpensive, to be perfectly honest, and pretty wide. You can cover a pretty good area with it. So, Marie, that's what we got for you now. Thank you for calling, Johanna in Verona. Let's go to you next. Hi, Johanna.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Neil. How are you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm excited to be talking to you. So I'm in Verona. I'm in a green space, yay. And I have a creek in our backyard, or creek, however you want to say it. I have a lot of jewelweed and a lot of garlic mustard that I'm losing the battle because I'm the only one pulling it, and my neighbors do not. So start to finish, I would like to plant some prairie seeds or whatever, some natural plants back there. And I need to know how to start and how to finish.
Okay, well, I have a couple questions for you first. Since you have jewelweed, is it the orange or the yellow jewelweed?
It's orange. It's beautiful, okay. But I hate it.
It's beautiful, and it's fantastic for hummingbirds. Hummingbirds love it. And interestingly, jewelweed is an annual. And you would swear it was a perennial because it comes back in the same place year after year after year. But every year it has to re-germinate from new seeds and come back. And it typically grows in damp areas. And I'm assuming this area is damp and maybe a little bit of shade, like a half a day of sun and a half a day of shade. Is that possible?
That's correct.
Yep, that's where you would find it. And that's where you would find the garlic mustard, either in full shade or partial shade. Occasionally it creeps out into the sun. So garlic mustard is a biennial. And the jewelweed is a native annual, and the garlic mustard is a non-native invasive biennial. So I can tell you how to control garlic mustard. I've never really tried to control jewelweed because I view it as a friendly plant because of all its great services, especially for hummingbirds and pollinators. But I can tell you how to control garlic mustard if that would be of interest to you. Is that something that would be helpful?
I think we may have lost her.
Oh,
well, we
okay.
can.
Well, you know, we can. Can we talk? Garlic mustard is a great topic, Larry, if you'd like to go into it. I mean, probably half the people in Wisconsin have to deal with it.
You know, they probably do. Jill Nadeau, I know, has dealt with the garlic mustard. She's the queen of garlic mustard, as a matter of fact.
You could eat it. You could eat it. That's one good way to get rid
she,
of it.
She eats it all the time. Don't ever go over to her place for dinner. You're going to get garlic mustard. We're in our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, stop back here. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions. Any amount of a gift makes a big difference. Listener support's the largest source of funding for our shows, and that's why it's important you go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make a contribution.
And we've got about only 5 minutes left in this hour, and we're still looking for 14 more people to join in. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs that you rely on every day.
Thanks if you've already given. If you haven't, boy, the time is right now as we near the top of the hour here. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
Absolutely. And, you know, we just heard all kinds of great information from Neil. And every time he's on, I learn something. And every time one of our other guests are on, I learn something. And that's what is so important about WPR. You know, it enriches our lives. And it is listener supported, which is an even greater thing. And that means that when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Just take a few minutes and give your gift.
And you can get your WPR water bottle. This stainless steel water bottle is perfect for everyday use or for your next outdoor adventure. Support the programs you value and show off your love for WPR. Starts with a gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
My name's Kelly Davis, and I live in Whitewater.
I'm Kathy Ross, and I live in Whitewater. I'm originally from North Carolina, and there, public radio was very much part of my life. And so about 6 years ago, I came to southeastern Wisconsin to be closer to my family. And one of the things that my daughter told me before I got here was, Mom, you're going to love WPR. And she was right.
All the credit is mine for introducing my mother to WPR. Probably one of the better things I've done for you, huh, Mom? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I would agree.
Yeah.
Make your contribution today because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click Donate.
That's right. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And your contribution could be $10 a month, could be $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
Absolutely. And we have a couple minutes to go in this hour, and we're looking for 10 more pledges. So 10 more people to join in. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
We're listener-powered here at WPR. That means that your donation right now makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
A $10 donation or contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio works out to just 33 cents a day. Now that is a great value.
Yeah, make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and you'll get a lot in return.
Absolutely. So we need 10 more people to support WPR programs in the next couple of minutes, and we'll meet our goal. WPR is listener-powered. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
It's a great time to support Garden Talk. Garden Talk is one of our popular programs on the Ideas Network. We love bringing it to you every Friday and Saturday morning, and I hope you love the show. If you love Garden Talk, be a great time to contribute in support of the show. Easy to do. All you need to do is go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Again, that's WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. So important. Thanks if you've given. If you haven't done it yet, do it right now. I'm Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau for the Ideas Network. We're talking about prairie gardening on Garden Talk today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Neil DeBoel, president of Prairie Nursery. What questions you have about prairie gardening? Are you looking for plant recommendations? You can give a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas at WPR.org. Thanks to everybody who contributed to our first hour. This half hour, we have a challenge grant from the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association. So, and it's $2,000, so that's great. So if you want to contribute, you haven't done it yet, now would be a good time to do it, and your pledge gets doubled, essentially. So we'll talk more about it later, but just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution, and it is doubled. And, Neil, we have Jim in Kettle Moraine on the line, so let's go there. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry, Neil. By the way, 33 cents a day is a terrific deal for you guys. we've got 10 acres on a hilltop in the Kettle Moraine, and we've planted thousands of trees. We've got wildflowers and pastures and all of that stuff. We've got an orchard, including a grapevine, and last year I had a new problem with the grapevine I need some help with. I trim it in the fall or during the winter. Actually, I should be out there doing that right now. And then in the spring, it grows up as you would expect. And I have noticed that besides the wonderful fruit, in the springtime, you get an amazing fragrance. It's the most perfume-like thing I've ever smelled in the wild. But last year, I didn't get it. And I went down to investigate. And here, when the grapevine had gotten to the bud and the flowering stage, they just disappeared. And I suspect a bug ate them all off. I don't know what it was, and I don't know how to get around that. Do you have a suggestion?
Well, I'm not really a grapevine expert. I'm more of a native plant guy. Larry, might you have some insight on this?
Yeah, I think one of the things, if you can get some photos of the insect that created the problem and send them to our insect diagnostic lab, UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, they can give you, they can tell you what the insect is and then how to work with it. And there's also another great publication that's published by UW Extension, the UW Learning Store. It's learningstore.uwex.edu, and it's called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And it covers some of the information about bugs or insects, but it also does a really good job on just taking care of those grapes. I would highly recommend you get a copy of that publication. It's been very well received, and it's Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. You get it from the UW Extension Learning Store, learningstore.uwex.edu. So there you go. Jim, good luck. Appreciate it. Mike in La Crosse, we'll go to you. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Yes, calling about American bittersweet. And how do you recognize it from the invasive?
American bittersweet. How do you recognize it? And I think he was asking probably about controlling it. We kind of lost you there, Mike. But Neil, yeah, anything on that?
I'm guessing he's talking about discerning American bittersweet from Oriental bittersweet, which is a fairly recent invasive in southern Wisconsin. It just appeared on my property a few years ago. So, and they're a little bit difficult to tell apart. The Oriental bittersweet tends to have much denser foliage on the vines than the American bittersweet, which tends to have the foliage spaced out more along it. The fruits are fairly similar. They have this orange color, but the Oriental, and I don't have that much experience with it because as soon as I saw it, I killed it. So I don't want to see any fruit on it. But you'd have to, I would just do a little Google search and look at the different pictures of the plants. But the Oriental bittersweet generally, in my limited experience, has a denser leaf along the vine itself. Fruits are fairly similar, but I think that, if I recall correctly, the Oriental bittersweet are a little bit greener until they mature. But I don't see it very often. So, but look at the leaves. Right. That doesn't help you.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Mary in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question regarding Trillium. We moved from northern Wisconsin to this area the fall of 19, and I was pleased to see Trillium in the edge of my woods last spring, but they never bloomed, and I wonder what the problem is.
Were there no blooms at all?
None.
None. Okay, and this was the first year that you noticed them, correct?
Yeah, that we just moved here.
Oh, you just moved. Okay, got it. That's a very good question. Now, the Trillium grandiflorum, the large flower Trillium or white Trillium, is extremely slow growing from seed. And generally speaking, for those of you who have ever grown it from seed, you know that it will require 7 to 10 years to reach flowering stage. And it grows this bulb, and it takes a very long time. So it might be possible that you have a young population, but usually there are mature plants around that produce the seeds for the Trilliums to germinate from and grow. So the other possibility is that if you have a high deer population, the deer are notorious for chopping off eating the flowers. So it might be possible that they ate them. But you would have seen the decapitated flower stems. Did you see any stems at all that came up and then were chopped off, eaten off?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And we do have a deer problem, but we've fenced them out.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not deer. Okay. And that's a very, very good question. Now, are you sure they're Trilliums?
Well, I know in northern Wisconsin I saw a lot of Trillium. And so I think they are, but if there's something that has a very similar leaf, maybe I misidentified them.
There is another plant that is quite similar, not identical, but is commonly mistaken for Trillium, and that's the jack-in-the-pulpit. The jack-in-the-pulpit also has three leaves of the same height, but it has two leaves offset from one, whereas the Trillium is equidistant at 120 degrees off the center. So it is possible that you saw young jack-in-the-pulpits, but of course jack-in-the-pulpit has a very distinctive flower as well. So unless they were just young jacks, that is possible that you could have seen that. I'm trying to think what other plant you might see that would be similar to a Trillium. If you can take a picture of it,
this spring and email it to me. I might be able to identify it. And there are other ways. There's all sorts of great internet sources where you can send it. There's one called iNaturalist. And Larry, you may know some others too.
Well, yeah, actually, we have master gardeners in every county in the state. And if you in the spring, you got a photo of it, you could send it to the horticulturist or agricultural extension person in your county, and they should be able to identify it for you as well. And that would be pretty easy. Or you could just take one of the plants in and show it to them, and they'd be happy to ID it for you. So that's another possibility as well, Mary. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Bonnie in Milwaukee has something for us. Bonnie, hi.
Thank you. I would like to know if you have a recommendation for a native ground cover to replace English ivy. It's on a very steep slope, about a 45-degree angle, about 4 feet high. And it's in a small city lot, but I'd like something that supports more nature than English ivy. And I have it in both the sun and the shade. Any recommendation?
Mm-hmm. So do you have, what kind of shade? Is it part shade or full shade?
Oh, the areas that are shade are full shade. It's very dense shade under trees. And then there's some west facing part of the slope that's full sun.
And so what kind of soil?
A number of different plants, or if there's something that's adaptable. And the soil is we're near the river, so it's kind of a well-drained, sandy muck soil.
Muck soil? So
when it's wet, it stays wet a long time, but there is a high sand content. It's very weird.
Okay. But it's not low and wet, correct? It's on a slope, you said, right?
Correct.
Okay. And you have full sun. What direction is the slope facing in the full sun area?
The full sun is west.
Facing west. Okay, so it gets pretty hot in the afternoon, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So it might be, two different plants or...
Mm-hmm. Have you tested the soil for the pH?
Not recently. As of about 7 years ago, it was pretty high alkaline. It was, I think, 7.5.
Okay, that's good to know.
Some areas 7.8.
Okay, that's quite high. Okay, let me give you some suggestions for the shady area. A highly alkaline tolerant plant that is a great ground cover, but it doesn't like moisture. It likes well-drained soil with a pH of 7 to 7.8, 7.9, possibly up to 8, is called wild ginger. And wild ginger will form a solid mat if you plant the plants about 1 foot on center. In about 3 years, it will usually fill in completely. But it needs an alkaline soil, and it sounds like you have the perfect situation for that, as long as it's not too damp. It needs good drainage. It does not like high moisture.
And the sunny area?
Oh boy, the sunny area—that's a little trickier. Is this sunny? The sunny area is the sand. Is it dry sand?
Again, there's a high sand content, but it's like a combination of sand and the clay soils.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's river sediment because we're relatively near the river. But when it's wet, it stays wet a long time. But again, this is on a slope that area dries out in a hurry.
Okay, so it doesn't stay wet very long, correct?
Right.
Okay. A really good ground cover is wild strawberry. And it forms some nice mat. And for dry sand, and this is really only for dry sand, it sounds like this might be a possibility, would be a plant called bearberry, which creeps along the ground. It's actually a sort of a woody plant, and it forms a nice ground cover.
Barberry.
And this needs, you don't see bearberry very often. Arctostaphylos uva ursi, to be precise. Arctostaphylos. Bear, like B-E-A-R. Bear, like black bear, brown bear, grizzly bear. Okay. Bearberry. But it needs a really well-draining soil. Don't put it in clay. Don't put it in good loam. It just won't compete. Okay, so those are a couple of your possibilities for that situation.
Another possibility for the shaded area is good old Mayapple. And Mayapple is a great ground cover. It creeps, and it's gonna move. So watch out. It covers some territory. And if you want the most aggressive native ground cover that I can think of, there's a goldenrod called Zigzag Goldenrod. And this will grow in any well-drained soil in shade to moderate shade to fairly deep shade. It creeps by rhizomes, and it will take over. So do not plant it near any other plants that you don't want it to get into. But, man, you want to cover some ground and protect the soil, you plant some Zigzag Goldenrod, and you are in business and then some.
Okay, there you go, Bonnie. Thank you so much for calling. On that note, Neil, it's always a pleasure to have you with us today. It's great, and I hope we have a chance to talk again. Always enjoy you being with us. And Neil DeBoles, let's see, go to www.prairienursery.com and take a look at his site. There's lots of good information on it. And another person who has a lot of good information is Jill Nadeau, and she's with me to talk about our winter member drive. You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting talks, and we rely on you to keep programs like this one going strong.
That's right. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Big thanks to the Wisconsin Master Gardener Association. They gave us $2,000 for a matching grant, and we've already met it.
We have.
That's so great. But there's still an opportunity for you to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. If you haven't contributed yet, where should they go, Jill?
Well, I believe they should go to WPR.org, or they can call 888-202-2552, Larry.
You hear great guests all day long on the Ideas Network. This is a unique radio service in the nation. Your support makes it possible. Shows like this one with Neil DeBoles and Garden Talk are very popular, and we love having them on. Make a gift right now for Garden Talk or for the other programs you enjoy at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when you do that, don't forget to ask for your WPR stainless steel water bottle. Your support for the programs you love will be on full display with every sip. It starts with your gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are so many things to love about Wisconsin. It's really a beautiful state. The parks, the forests, the rivers are some of the best things about living here.
And we like to think of WPR as part of what makes Wisconsin special. It's like a natural resource, something that's available to everyone, something that's fundamental to life in Wisconsin. With your gift, you keep WPR a strong resource that everyone can enjoy. So contribute now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can turn on the radio every day without an upfront charge. You can enjoy hours of in-depth conversations, great advice for everyday living like you get here on Garden Talk and our other shows. WPR is available to everybody because listeners like you help cover the cost. So I hope you'll join in today. Become a member with your first ever gift, maybe, of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
You're busy. It can be difficult to squeeze in all the day's to-dos, but no matter how challenging your schedule is, it's always fast and convenient to make your contribution to WPR Online. Just go to WPR.org. With secure online pledging, you can pick the amount you want to give, how you'd like to pay, and even ask for a thank you gift. It's secure, quick, and pledging your support is a simple, easy task that has a huge impact. It funds all the in-depth news, thoughtful conversations, and excellent music and entertainment that are a part of your everyday, no matter how busy things get. So give now at WPR.org. Of course, you can always give us a call at 888
202-2552.
Let me repeat that. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support, our biggest source of funding for the programs you rely on, and that's why your support during our drive is so important. And maybe it's a $10 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Yes, and giving
Giving is really terribly hard, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's real difficult. It probably takes at least a few minutes. And, it's super simple. Yeah. It really, really is.
Oh, man, it just takes a couple of minutes, and that donation will come back to you every day in the form of engaging programs. So show your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
Absolutely. You know, and once in a while, Larry, you actually get more than you pay for. And WPR is one place where that's true every single day. So consider a gift of maybe just $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
Hard to buy much for $2, but at Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news, a lot of talk, a lot of garden talks, and a lot of music possible. That works out to $60 a month, and you can make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We always ask you to give the amount that's right for you, and it's helpful to use a formula. Look at it this way. Say you hear like three things a day that you'll really are glad to hear, and if you paid a dime for each one of those, well, that would work out to $10 a month. And if you want to do all that math, it basically it makes a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you know what? I just noticed that we did have a goal of 20 callers as well, and we're sitting, I think we still have 9 or so callers to go to reach.
Oh, it's 7, Larry.
We're down to 7. All right. Yeah. Well, we got 7 to go. If you haven't done it yet, do it now. You have made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and so I hope you'll make that decision to support us financially. It's as simple as that. We're listener-supported. Your support is crucial at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That's right. And you can support the programs that you value and ask for your WPR stainless steel water bottle. Ask for yours with your gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Like Vincent in La Crosse says, I'm giving to keep WPR's excellent programs healthy. And Rick in Marshfield says, I need to give to support Garden Talk.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Vincent. As a matter of fact, your gift is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And there's still a couple of minutes left. Jill and I have to go away, but there's still time for you to contribute in support of Garden Talk. And if you haven't done it yet, please do it now. Go to WPR.org. Our phone, 888-202-2552. Again, thank you so much. We really appreciate your support. It's it keeps us going. We get some nice letters and emails, and your contribution are certainly a great, wonderfully appreciated from us. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau for the Ideas Network.